On the 21st today, we're going to the movies. First, there's a record number of diverse nominees for this Sunday's Oscars.
I think it's amazing that in the Best Picture category, I think we have 9 nominations, and of those, Fences and Hidden Figures, Moonlight are movies by or about African Americans.
We'll talk with Chicagoan Chaz Ebert, a TV and movie producer and CEO of Ebert Productions. Then we take a step closer to home for the Insect Fear Film Festival, which has been taking place every year at the University of Illinois for more than 3 decades.
The reason we do this is that it's an opportunity to acquaint the public with the reality of insect biology without, say, giving a boring lecture on insect physiology.
That's entomologist Mae Barenbaum, the festival's founder. But first, WBEZ's Natalie Moore talks about her documentary on Chicago segregation that's being released this weekend. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Across the country, black home ownership doesn't create the same wealth it does for white homeowners. But we know the recession made that even worse. And what does the story of black homeownership look like in Chicago? We know it's one of our most segregated cities, but it's also home to many affluent black communities. Chicago Public Media's Natalie Moore used her family's personal story as a way to explore this issue as a journalist. Black Homeownership, The Promise and Pitfalls is a new radio documentary that airs. It's being released this weekend. It airs in Chicago on Sunday afternoon. Natalie is WBEZ's Southside Bureau reporter and joins us from there now. Hi, Natalie. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hey, Nyla.
So, Natalie, this is based on your book, The South Side, A Portrait of Chicago and American Segregation. That book covers everything from housing to jobs to access to food. Why did you focus this radio documentary on housing in particular?
Yeah, so we have to think about, you know, how can we distill an entire book into a 30-minute documentary? And a lot of the feedback that I've gotten from the book is that the parts that really resonate with people are the personal stories, the personal narrative that's there. And I thought that, I mean, the heart of the book is about residential segregation and how that spins out into the rest of our lives with segregation. And because housing is at the heart of this, I decided to drill down and focus on that.
And so when you think about that, you write about there's so many reasons for why black homeowners, black middle class homeowners are less wealthy than their white counterparts. But I think we kind of need a historical context to this. And I wonder, when people are thinking about this issue now, what do we need to look back to and be aware of when we talk about practices like redlining? What's sort of the historical context behind all of this?
Yes, and it's very important to remember history because we talk about some of these things as if they're in the past and don't have any impact today. So in a lot of cities like Chicago during the Great Migration, which is when African Americans left the South to come north, there were a number of policies or laws or practices that kept the races separate. I call that Jim Crow in the North. So redlining meant that banks weren't giving loans in areas that were red-coded. Those were black neighborhoods. You had racially restrictive covenants that banned the sale or rental of a white home to someone black. You also had the real estate industry doing blockbusting, panic peddling, basically scaring white people and saying the blacks are coming. And when we talk about white flight, we talk about it really in a vacuum as if it's something that just happened. But there was a path for white flight. When whites started leaving black neighborhoods, a lot of that was stoked by fear from the industry. But they had to have somewhere to go. They weren't homesteaders out on the open prairie. The government built highways to those places, the FHA favored loans into those newly built suburbs. So we're talking about post-World War II. So all of that has really plays into the composition of what our communities still look like today.
And so that plays into the composition of that. And how do you help people understand sort of through your book why that still continues to be an impact today? Everyone, I think there are people who are listening who say, yeah, but that was 50 years ago. Why does that matter now?
Right, so we have new things that happen now, such as blacks who qualify for conventional loans have been black neighborhoods are targeted by predatory lending. We also, you know, a lot of what I talk about in the documentary in the book is my lived experience, my parents' lived experience. But what does that look like? So my parents moved to, what does the data say about that? My parents moved to a black middle class neighborhood on the Chicago South Side. Block clubs, homes that were upkept, mostly homeowners in the area, all the things that most people look for when they're looking for the American dream. However, the market for home ownership is different based on race, and studies have shown that if a neighborhood is more than 10% black, the value of the home goes down. That's only because of skin color. It's not because something happens to black people when they move in. And there's also the black tax, Bureau of Goods and Services. Even middle-class areas seem to be disinvested. And so if the percentage of blacks in a neighborhood increases, and then that home value goes down. So the most you can get out of your home is if you are in a all-white or virtually all-white neighborhood. And this is because whites want to live in homogeneous white neighborhoods. They define a lot of blacks as 10%. Black people, when they talk about diversity, they're talking about 50-50. You also have appraisals that are lower that lower home values in black communities. There's also been sociological studies that look at white homeowners and say, if you want all these things, good schools, safe streets, a good community, everything that you say that you want, but the neighborhood has a significant portion of blacks, they don't want to move there.
Mm-hmm. So there's a really interesting idea that you talk about in your book. You quote Emory University law professor Dorothy Brown, who asks, why don't we say no one gets a mortgage interest deduction unless they live in an integrated neighborhood? Can you explain that concept?
Yeah, it's a pretty radical solution. So Dorothy is a tax professor at Emory, looks at the tax code. So the mortgage interest deduction, there's research that says no one buys a home because of that. But let's not allow it across the board, is what she says. Now that we know there is racial disparity out there on home ownership based on the percentage of black neighbors, why not level the playing field and use the tax deduction to disrupt that? So she says no one should get a mortgage interest deduction unless they live in an area that is 10% or more black. And then because the idea is that we realize that you are taking a penalty in the market if you live in an integrated or black neighborhood, and we want to compensate you by lowering your taxes.
And so, obviously, as you said, it's kind of a radical idea. The chances of that happening are pretty minimal, I would say. But do you think the point really is thinking about, or maybe just having a different way to look at this, maybe looking at fiscal government solutions, because this was caused in part by government policy to begin with?
Exactly. Redlining was, this was a partnership between public and private sectors, absolutely. And so there should be something that addresses those disparities, because somewhere in the history of our country, it was decided that home ownership was going to be the path to wealth building. And if you are in a black neighborhood, you're not going to live that same type of financial dream.
And why is home ownership such an important part of this? You mentioned the black tax. How does this sort of spill out into neighborhoods and schools and jobs? And then, everyone always thinks about Chicago and thinking about how maybe this, what role economic opportunity is playing in violence.
Yeah, so there is a vulnerability to the black middle class because it's not isolated the way white middle class communities are. They are in closer proximity to neighborhoods that may have poverty. And also black middle class is a little bit more of an elastic definition. You have working class people who live in black middle class neighborhoods. You do have some rental apartment buildings. And I don't necessarily think that black middle class people who live in those neighborhoods want to cordon themselves off. That's just sort of how neighborhoods have existed. But what comes along with that may be less city investment from, City Hall, from businesses coming, you get unemployment. And then that vulnerability was really shown during the economic recession. And remember, a lot of black middle class jobs are tied to areas where we've seen layoffs, teachers, postal workers, municipal government workers.
Right. So that said, Natalie, do you think that when you're thinking about all of this, thinking about the topic of the documentary, do you think home ownership makes sense as a path for wealth and stability if you're Black?
It can't. Now, granted, I'm jaded. I had a condo for $172,000 that a few years later was appraised at $45,000. So, you know, I'm still getting from underneath that. You know, Dorothy Brown says that she's not telling people not to buy in Black neighborhoods or not to buy a home. We just have to think about different ways to diversify portfolios. So if you're looking at, wealth building, maxing out on your retirement funds, maybe going into stocks and bonds, or maybe you rent and you buy your home, maybe a summer home somewhere that's more in a homogeneous area. So there are different ways to configure how you want your life to live. And even people who would get less for an integrated neighborhood versus an all-white neighborhood, they may see the benefit of, well, I put a value on integration, and that's important to me, even if it means the house may be worth less.
Yeah. All of this is being discussed in a new radio documentary released by WBEZ, created by Chicago Public Media's Natalie Moore. It's called Black Home Ownership, The Promise and Pitfalls. It airs at 3 o'clock on Sunday on WBEZ. Natalie, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nyla.
What a difference a year makes. After the Oscars So White controversy this year, every acting category for this Sunday's Oscars includes a nominee of color, and a record 6 Black actors were nominated for awards.
Who is you, Sharon?
A long time trying not to remember. Try to forget all those times.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you're gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
Equilateral, trapezoid, isosceles, tetrahedron.
I have never seen a mind like the one your daughter has. You have to see what she becomes.
Come on! Hey. Mood like that. Hey.
Catherine, we all gonna end up unemployed riding around in this pile of junk.
You're welcome to walk the 16 miles.
Or sit in the back of the bus.
Wait, Corey. I want him to help me with this fence.
He got recruited by a college football team.
Ain't but two men ever played baseball good as you.
And what'd it ever get me?
Some people build fences to keep people out, and other people build fences to keep people in.
You're listening to The 21st. Those are trailers from 3 Best Picture Oscar-nominated films everyone's been talking about: Moonlight, Hidden Figures, and Fences. I have to say Moonlight's my personal favorite of those. Joining me now to talk about this Sunday's Oscars film and diversity is Chaz Ebert. She's not just the CEO of Ebert Companies, which includes RogerEbert.com, the movie review site. She's also a TV and movie producer based in Chicago, on the line with us from L.A. Hey, Chaz, welcome back to The 21st.
Thank you, Nyla. I'm really happy to be here, and especially to talk about the Oscars this year. What a change from last year.
It is. Are you excited about Sunday?
Oh, I'm so excited because, as you know, the last 2 years, there was sort of this Oscars So White campaign, and people were saying, why don't you see more people who represent America in, the diversity of America on screen or in the Oscar nominations? And this year, we do. I think it's amazing that in the Best Picture category, I think we have 9 nominations, and of those, Fences and Hidden Figures, Moonlight, and X are movies by or about African Americans. Lion is a person of color. It's a
Dev
a
Patel.
True story.
Yeah, sure. And it's a true story about India.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Manchester by the Sea is actually produced by an African-American woman. So some interesting things this year.
How much do you think this is a direct result of the Oscars so white criticism, especially last year?
I think that, of course, some of these movies were, well, they were already being produced, but the Oscars so white campaign definitely 100% helped because it raised the awareness of not only Hollywood, but of the whole community of filmmakers about the issue of inclusion and how important that is. You know, I say that, you know, I think last year when we were talking, I said that it was important to see yourself represented on screen. If you see it, you can be it. And it's just great. For instance, Hidden Figures. Who knew that there was a whole room of African-American women, what they used to call colored computers, who worked at NASA and helped put a man on the moon? I mean, it's just a, and it gives little girls everywhere, not just little black girls, but girls everywhere who are, you know, are interested in science and math. It helps them to realize that this is something they can achieve.
That is such a great story. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, go directly into, we're going to go through the ballot, go through all of these things with Chaz Ebert. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, which hosts the Sesquicentennial Speaker Series kicking off March 2nd. Visit archives.library.illinois.edu/150. The University Library at Illinois.
Tuning into the 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo, and my guest is Chaz Ebert. She's the CEO of Ebert Companies, which includes RogerEbert.com, the movie review site. She's also a TV and movie producer based in Chicago. She's in LA because of this Sunday's Oscars, and that's what we're talking about now. Chaz, just before the break, we were talking about Hidden Figures and such a great story about women and their role in the space production that's nominated for Best Picture. Before we get into all of the specific categories, can we talk a little bit more about Hidden Figures? We all saw it, actually, our whole team, the program, our program staff, we all went to see it together. And of course, because we're journalists, we wanted to see how much of it was true. And I couldn't believe how many of those scenes, especially when the astronauts are calling back and saying, I want the lady to check the figures. I don't trust the machine. That actually happened. Is it kind of remarkable to you that this story has never been told before?
I was dumbfounded that I had never, that I had only heard that a little bit about the story once, and that was maybe 2 years ago from this British physicist who loved the story of the women in Hidden Figures. And he said, why don't you know this story? And I actually thought he was making it up. But, you know, one of my favorite parts of Hidden Figures is when Octavia Spencer, the character that she plays, they get a new IBM computer, and she teaches herself how to program it. She teaches herself Fortran by reading a book, going to a library, and eventually she's running all of these machines. That's a true story as well. So it's amazing.
It is amazing. So let's go through the categories, right? Because you mentioned Octavia Spencer. She's nominated for Hidden Figures. I think we think about folks like Denzel Washington, Viola Davis. Let's start with the categories. Can we talk about, let's start with Best Picture, if you want to start with that, with the ballot.
Best Picture. Mm-hmm. You know, of the movies, Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. You know, the conventional wisdom is that La La Land will win in a lot of these categories. But I have to tell you that out here lately, I've been hearing there may be an upset and that Moonlight, Barry Jenkins' film, may actually win Best Picture. That would be a big upset.
That would be a big upset. It would make me very happy because I love Moonlight. Was my favorite out of all of these. You know, Chaz, can I ask you, I know you love the movie, so I don't know if you feel like every year you feel this way, but for me, it just sort of seems like there's such an amazing group of films this year. La La Land's lovely. I'm not trying to denigrate it. I thought it was a great film. Hidden Figures, Lion, just made me cry. I mean, I just think it's such an emotional story. What do you think about this year's films compared to last year?
I have to tell you this. I can't compare it to last year because I can't remember all of the movies that were Best Picture contenders last year. I can tell you that this is a strong list of films. I love Moonlight. It's such a beautiful story, the way that Barry Jenkins and Terrell Alvin McCraney wrote it. It's such a layered coming-of-age story, and it's not cliched. It's written in a very authentic, real voice about a coming-of-age of this boy and his realizing his sexuality. I think, you know, I love La La Land because I like musicals, but to me, La La Land, the biggest emotional punch it carries is in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a great ending. We won't give it away. We haven't seen it, but
we won't give it away.
That really makes it for me, right?
Yes. And Damien Chazelle, the director of La La Land, was also the one who did Whiplash. So it's a great movie. Lion, yeah, it's so beautiful the way the beginning, where they tell the story of the little boy who gets lost from his home in one part of India and ends up in another part. And then later, Dev Patel plays him as an adult, and kudos to Dev. He got an Oscar nomination as well. You know, it's a beautiful story. Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson's movie. Who knew that it could be a story about, and this is based on a true story about.
Yeah, what is that about? I was going to say, I don't know that much about that. I feel like that one's been lost a little in all the conversations with the others.
Okay. It's a true story of a conscientious objector who still wanted to serve in the Army, and he ends up saving a lot of his wounded soldiers. And it's based on a true story. So it's actually very well done. So I think that it's a strong lineup, but Arrival, my goodness, this is a thinking person's sci-fi movie, also well done. And, you know, for the first time, we have Academy Award nomination for African-American cinematographer for Arrival, sci-fi. That's also, you know, historic. But, you know, Moonlight and Hidden Figures, I think that those are the two that I would really be rooting for in Best Picture.
So Moonlight and Hidden Figures are what you're rooting for. Can I ask you, just on the Best Picture Award?
Even though if any one of these won, it would be fine, but those are the two.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for Moonlight. I love that it's a Miami story you don't hear very much. Terrell Alvin McCraney, we should mention also, not just a Miami guy. Mark Arthur Genius winner was at Steppenwolf in Chicago, so that's sort of his Illinois tie to all of this, too. When you mention, I want to talk to you about that when we're talking about the diversity, we sort of have kind of in front of the camera, but then we have behind the camera. You mentioned that cinematographer, Kimberly Stewart's the second Black woman to be nominated for producing with Manchester by the Sea. The first was Oprah Winfrey for Selma. How important is it when we're talking about diversity to think about people behind the camera, producing, cinematographers, and how do you think we're doing on that score?
It's immensely important. It's immensely important because if you don't have a number of people of color behind the camera or making decisions about which projects are going to be greenlit, you will not have the opportunity to see these films put in production. And we wouldn't be talking about the Oscars at all because these movies wouldn't exist. So Oscars, you know, when you talk about the Oscars, that's just the end point of the movie. You have to go right back to the beginning. And you have to have people of color in every segment of the movie filmmaking process. That's why I think that Carol Boone Isaacs at the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences should be applauded for her. She has a 5-year plan to increase the membership of Oscar voters, to increase the diversity of the membership, and also to increase the diversity of the board members of the Oscars.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's not something that I think people outside the industry know that much about. And, you know, Chaz, you're a TV and movie producer, and I can't help but think about when you think about women like Shonda Rhimes, what she's done in television. Do you think it's harder in film? Is it because it's more big budget? Like, do you think it's the big screen is still a harder thing than, you know, now, especially with like Netflix and Hulu? Like, I don't even want to say a TV screen, but just a smaller screen, I guess.
Well, it is. You know, it's funny that there's a saying that TV is the new movies. And by TV, I mean cable and all of the various platforms where you see movies by, not just movies and TV shows, by Amazon. Look at ESPN. They have in the documentary feature, OJ Made in America.
Yeah, that's the 30 this for 30, is, right.
30 for 30 films by ESPN. And that also has an African-American director. His name is Ezra Edelman, and he's the son of Marion Wright Edelman, who was the head of the Children's Defense League that Hillary Clinton got her start with many years ago.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
You know, and while I'm in that section, let me just say something that people aren't pointing out a lot. Four of the five documentary features this year, nominations, are either by or about African Americans. You have 13th by Ava DuVernay, O.J. Made in America that I mentioned, I Am Not Your Negro by Raoul Peck, who, you know, actually I think he's Haitian American. And you have Life Animated, made by Roger Ross Williams, who was the first African American director to get an Oscar for a short film feature called Songs by Prudence.
Mm. You mentioned ESPN's 30 for 30, and I just want to ask you about that. Yeah. That was a first for ESPN Films. They actually showed it in theaters so it could qualify for being nominated, which it did. Do you think we're going to see smaller, or as you're mentioning, sort of the Amazons and the Hulus doing things like that to also broaden the field of entry categories?
Absolutely. You better believe that every studio and every small house paid attention when that happened, when they saw that this was able to squeak into that Oscar nomination segment. So you will see more non-traditional features made in either non-traditional ways or by non-traditional movie houses, because this has opened the door for Oscar nominations for something that's not typically thought of as a, for instance, this is almost 8 hours. And it's, someone said, is it really a movie or is it a TV series?
So, right. But they entered it. It's interesting.
That.
Yeah, that was entered in the documentary category. Can we talk about actors?
Can I tell you two other things?
Sure.
Two other things I'm really tremendously excited about. I think this is the year that Viola Davis for Fences is going to get her. If she doesn't win actress in a supporting role, I mean, everyone in this category did a great job. You know, Naomi Harris in Moonlight, Nicole Kidman in Lion, Octavia Spencer in Hidden Figures, and Michelle Williams in Manchester by the Sea. But Viola Davis is, I mean, even talking about it, my voice gets a little catch in it because her performance is so fierce. It's so, it's so emotional, but it's also modulated because there are times when you can see she's suppressing what she feels about her marriage to the man played by Denzel Washington in Fences. And then when she explodes, she really explodes and she has the, you know, that's not coming out of her nose. And I mean, just the tears, it's everything. And it is, there's not another performance this year. She has to win.
She's the most nominated Black actress, right? And so Viola Davis is. So,
yes,
yeah.
This is her third time. And you know what? I don't know if you remember her in Antoine Fisher. The first time I remember seeing her.
No, that's what you reminded me.
Such a short period of time, but it was seared in my brain. She sat there, and I don't even know if she said a word. It was just her facial expressions. And she cried in that one too. This mother who had abandoned her son, and he finds her later, and she meets him. It was so strong. I never forgot her. she is one of our finest actresses today.
So that brings me to the big question, Chaz. I was going to ask you, do you feel like being just nominated matters, or how many wins do you think we're going to see here that are going to reflect, you know, we have the most diverse amount of nominees. Do you think that's going to be reflected in the winners?
You know, I think that the actor in a supporting role, I would be really surprised if Mahershala Ali didn't win for Moonlight, because his is another one of those performances that's seared in your brain. He played the drug dealer Juan, and
yeah, it's incredible.
Like I said, it was not a cliched performance, or it wasn't written like that. And it's so, when you leave that movie, you never forget him. Even I saw the movie a while ago, and as I sit here today, I can remember everything from the grill on his teeth. I remember
the water scene.
Talked. I remember everything about him. So,
yeah, that water
so
scene.
I do think he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
The water scene, the ocean scene when he's in the.
Oh, I love the ocean scene where he's teaching the little boy to swim, and it looks like a baptism. It's so beautiful. I'm getting all excited talking about all these, because there is so much to celebrate this year. When we get to actress in a leading role, you know, this year we have Ruth Negga from Loving, and I'm sorry that Loving didn't get more love, you know, in the nominations, because I thought Loving, it was a movie about Loving versus Virginia, the true story of the couple, the interracial couple in 1967, whose case went to the Supreme Court that made it legal for people of different races to marry each other. Up until then, it was illegal in several states for a man and a woman of different races to be married. And I think that Jeff Nichols' movie was quite beautiful, and Ruth Negga did a great job. I do think, though, in that category, I think people think maybe Emma Stone from La La Land, but I really think Isabelle Huppert in Elle is going to win that actress in a leading role this year.
Okay.
And she's a fine actress
We've gone through the ballot, Chaz. We just have about a minute left, and I can't let you go without asking, because we've been talking about the Oscars so much. I can't let you go without asking about this year's Ebert Fest in Champaign that's coming up soon. What are you most excited about this year for Ebert Fest?
Boy, I'm so excited, because I want to tell you so many secrets.
You're not going to tell us any secrets.
I want to tell you what we're opening with. I want to tell you.
Go ahead.
The stars that we're excited about coming, but I can't, because I have to release some of that information to our Ebert Fest audience first. I promised them that this year. And also, I can tell you one thing. Ebert Fest is not dedicated to a person this year. It's dedicated to principles, partly because of our political climate, but it's dedicated to empathy, compassion, kindness, and forgiveness. So some of the movies that we show will definitely reflect those things.
Well, we have that to look forward to coming up in April, Ebert Fest. And, of course, this Sunday, the Oscars. Thanks to Chaz Ebert, CEO of Ebert Companies, including RogerEbert.com, of course, the movie review site, for being at the movies with us for a few minutes and getting us excited about Sunday's Oscars. Chaz, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Nyla. And I have to tell you one other thing that is so important to remember, to mention, that Joy McMillan, because I think she's the first African-American woman nominated for editing a movie. She edited Moonlight, and I can't leave that out.
Oh,
we
can't.
We have to,
yet another reason for me to cheer for Moonlight.
Women and people of color, so thank you.
Thanks, Chaz.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Okay, from the Oscars to a little closer to home.
That's not part of the show.
Mama Lancelot!
To the boat!
No, not again.
It's so hot out here.
Just one more time.
I can fry an egg on my face.
There's spiders all over the building with flames coming out of their mouth.
That's no Mama Lanchula. That's a freaking gargantulantula.
Hired to lead an expedition.
You are the best guide in the world, and I expect to pay you accordingly.
Deep into a mine that collapsed 50 years before.
A lot of strange stories around that mine.
Any fool can go down into a mine. I want to make sure we all come back out.
Somewhere down here lies a cache of gems that, carat for carat, are more valuable than even diamonds.
We find the emeralds and we disappear.
Caved in. Prehistoric terror.
Okay, so maybe those aren't the idea of what you think of when you hear the words Insect Film Festival, but it's actually the Insect Fear Film Festival, and those are two of the films that will be featured at the 34th Annual Festival this Saturday at the University of Illinois, To Lava, Tulantula, and Caved In. I'm joined now on the line from L.A. by the president and CEO of Cinetel Films, Paul Hertzberg, who produced those, along with many other horror and science fiction films. The U of I alum is going to be in town in Champaign-Urbana this weekend for the film festival. In studio with me is Mae Barenbaum. She's a professor of entomology at the University of Illinois and the founder and organizer of the Insect Fear Film Festival. Paul, Mae, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi.
Thank you.
So, Paul, let me just, before we get into these specific films, Mae, I wonder if you can help us understand the idea behind this film festival. You've been doing this every year for more than three decades. Are we kind of, is this the genre of sci-fi, Sharknado, for those who are sort of familiar with that genre of horror, sci-fi, insect terror?
Very much so. And okay. The reason we do this is that it's an opportunity to acquaint the public with the reality of insect biology without, say, giving a boring lecture on insect physiology. And in fact, apropos of presenting the reality of the creatures featured in our movies, technically speaking, tarantulas are not insects. So they are spiders or arachnids, a whole different class of organisms. But that's part of the point of the festival, is to sort of contrast the Hollywood version with the actual version.
Well, and we've actually been having you can settle this for us, because we've been having an argument about this in the 21st production office, May, about whether insects are animals.
Oh, sure.
How would you answer that question?
No question.
Absolutely.
About it. Yeah.
Okay, so, but spiders or arachnids are not insects.
Correct. Right. They have eight legs, not six. All insects have six legs. Arachnids have eight. Then all kinds of other technical details. Spiders have no antennae, so don't believe what you see in Charlotte's Web. And insects have a pair of antennae.
Okay, and how did you pick these films in particular?
Well, actually, it's not the films as much as the producer who we picked, because we've done had a lot of interactions with Sci-Fi Network lately, because they continue to make insect fear films. And every year I when we plan to show a film from Sci-Fi, I get into contact with a guy named Russell Friedman, who has sort of oversight over non-theatrical video exhibition rights, because we want to do everything properly. If we're going to advertise and bring in the public, we need permission to show these for educational purposes. And I don't think Sci-Fi gets a lot of calls for, you know,
there are not a lot of universities
that
calling
are showing sci-fi movies.
Okay.
So we've become, you know, I guess friends over the years, and he happened to mention that one of his colleagues, Paul Hertzberg, was a U of I alum. And that was it. That was the moment I thought, if there's any way we can convince him to come back, we have a festival.
Okay, Paul, so you've been convinced to come back. Let's talk about the movie Tulava to Lantula. That just came out last year. Okay, and the premise is lava-spewing spiders that terrorize L.A. Is that accurate?
Well, actually, no. Lava Lantula, the original, was lava-spewing spiders that terrorize L.A. In Tulava to Lantula, we moved to Miami and South Florida.
Ah, okay. So you're
in. We wanted to share the grief and the fear.
And so the spiders have moved to South Florida. Have the spiders? Are they on South Beach? Are they in the Everglades? What's happening with these spiders?
Yes. You are correct on both counts.
Okay.
They will be in the Everglades and they will be on South Beach.
And when you're doing these, Paul? Kind of how do you? I wonder what sort of your motivation is when you're doing these. Do you kind of think, I want the audience to have fun. I want them to be freaked out. Do you go with a feeling that you want to leave the audience with? What's sort of your modus operandi when you're doing these?
Okay. It started with Lava Lantula, which I believe aired at the festival last year.
Correct.
And we created that in conjunction with the Sci-Fi Channel. And the goal was to make a creature horror film with a sense of humor. To me, the best horror is also we can get you laughing at the same time. Then when the scares come, they're even scarier. And we got fortunate in the fact that Steve Guttenberg agreed to be in the film. And we said, well, God, it would be a hoot if we could have, you know, a reunion of sorts of the Police Academy cast. So we rounded up Michael Winslow and a number of the other, you know, cast members. And so it created a lot of, you know, buzz and notoriety. And so we now have the comedy element covered. And now we just had to scare you with the Lava Lantulas.
So I'm thinking about horror insect films, and I'm thinking in particular because we're talking about spiders, I'm thinking about Arachnophobia. And how still to this day, I remember watching that with my sister and her freaking me out because she took her fingers and ran them up my arm while we were watching and me jumping up and screaming, thinking the spiders were coming to get me. Do you think about how much this might feed into people's fears about insects, Paul, when you're making this?
No.
You know, just because it's...
Not even a little bit.
Because no, they're lava spewing or goal, other things.
When the movie starts, I'm going to go back to Lava Lantula. There's basically an earthquake and a volcano in the middle of the 405 in Los Angeles, and you know,
that's
spiders.
That's highly plausible.
Spewing out. Now, yes, highly plausible if they get through the traffic jams.
Yeah.
But our goal is to entertain, and so that's the number one, you know, purpose of the films. And again, we want to combine humor with scares.
And May, for you, is your goal to also entertain? Is it also just to get people talking about insects? What's your thinking behind
that? Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point of the festival, is that, believe it or not, some people might consider the scientific discipline of entomology a bit dry and off-putting. So we are taking advantage exploiting Hollywood's ability or great skills at storytelling, so we can, you know, draw in the audience based on the apparently almost universal love of movies, and then contrast what shows up on the screen with reality. And in fact, thanks to our two movies, we will have a lot of interactive exhibits so people can actually see and touch and interact with tarantulas. And
not lava-spewing tarantulas.
No lava will be spewed, I promise you that. And also we'll have a number of displays of rhinoceros beetles, the stars of the second movie, so you can, again, contrast the Hollywood version with the reality, and the reality is infinitely less terrifying.
So you can pet tarantulas, and you'll have tarantulas to pet at
yes,
the
we'll have
film festival.
multiple tarantulas as well as a broad variety of other arthropods, including insects and some other arachnids.
Okay, I just said I want to go on record as saying that no spiders were harmed in the filming of this movie.
Is there, and thank you for saying that on air. I'm sure there's also that at the end of the film. That's Paul Hertzberg. He's the president and CEO of Cinetel Films. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois. In studio with me in Urbana, Mae Barenbaum is an entomologist here. We're talking about the Insect Fear Film Festival, the 34th annual one that's happening this weekend in Urbana. Mae, do you spend all year screening films to decide what's going to end up in the festival?
Funny story, I guess. So I had this idea when I first came to University of Illinois as an assistant professor. I didn't know anything about how to put on a film festival, so I contacted the University of Studies, and my letter got passed down to the assistant director, who was very politely declined my invitation to co-sponsor, but then said he would help me figure out how to run this festival. And now, long story short, I'm married to him. So that's kind of what
we
do.
That's how you met?
That's how we met, from the Insect Fear Film Festival. Least romantic love story ever.
It's still very sweet, though. So do you guys pick? So you're watching these films all year, in other words.
That's what we do. We are constantly looking out for potential Insect Fear Film Festival material. And Hollywood does not disappoint. Thank you, Paul Hertzberg, and your colleagues.
And so, Paul, can you tell us about the other film? It's Caved In, as we heard them. Caved In, the guy shouting prehistoric terror. What's the premise of this one?
That movie was actually shot in Romania, I would say, a number of years ago. And it's good guys, bad guys, and they're
vampire insects?
No. They're looking for jewels, and they end up finding, beetles, who are large and prehistoric and hungry.
Okay, so a little bloodthirsty. I was just thinking of sort of a vampire theme, because you said you shot it in Romania. But and with these, Paul, when you're making these, I wonder what goes into when you're doing these kind of like sci-fi, as you were sort of joking, no spiders were harmed in the making of Tulava Tarantula. How much of it is computer generated? How much of this is relies on special effects versus actual real life things?
Well, I think Mae would agree that there's probably no such thing as a real Mama Lantula or Gargantulantula. So those are computer graphics.
Yeah.
All the spiders are computer graphics.
You'd have a hard time hiding the greyhound-sized, Winnebago-sized tarantulas. And if you have them, we here in the department would like to see them.
So the Gargantulantula, how big is it?
Well, it's bigger than the Mama Lantula. And you just have to watch the movie to see.
All right. After the film, there's different Q&As. Mae, what kind of questions are they? Do people ask very serious questions in this Q&A, or what's the idea of that?
Well, so the first movie's at 7:30. That's Tulava Tarantula, and it wraps up about 9. And at 9 o'clock, actually, before we have the Q&A, we're going to present an award to Paul, an award of appreciation from the entomologists here at University of Illinois, in part two, because he's passing up the Oscars to be here.
So wow.
We think he deserves an award as well. So,
But I did vote, so my vote's already in.
Well, there you go. Well, lots going on this weekend if you love the movies. As we just said, there's the Oscars on Sunday, but before that, there is the 34th Annual Insect Fear Film Festival. We'll have all the information about it at our website, 21stshow.org. If you follow us on Twitter, 21stshow is our handle. We'll tweet out all of the links to that as well. I want to thank Paul Hertzberg on the line with us from L.A., going to be in Central Illinois this weekend. Mae Barenbaum, entomologist at the University of Illinois and the founder and organizer of the Insect Fear Film Festival. Mae, Paul, thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That's all the time we have for today. I should mention the event, Insect Fear Film Festival. It's this Saturday, I said, at the University of Illinois. Doors open at 6 p.m. at Folinger Auditorium. It's free. All that information, like I said, is at our website, 21stshow.org. As I also mentioned, you can follow us on Twitter. We do live tweet during the show with more analysis, background links, and what we're talking about, like I said. And when we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest Illinois news. We're produced by Hala DeLehi, Christine Herman, and Alan Montesilio. Abrar Alhiti is our intern. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help from Steve Mork, and Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help, and special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.